Welcome to On My Walk, the reading podcast that helps you capture reading's aha moments and apply them to your life and leadership. Today, I'm reflecting on my walk through the pages of Jason Matthews' New York Times bestseller, Red Sparrow. Now, this was Matthews' first novel. He's since turned out two more, and apparently many critics felt that Red Sparrow was a very good book. Matthews received the Edgar Allan Poe Award in 2014 for Best First Novel. Hey, since we love books, we ought to be familiar with this award. Each spring, Mystery Writers of America present the Edgar Awards, widely acknowledged to be the most prestigious awards in the genre. And Matthews, as I mentioned, won the Edgar Award for Best First Novel. Now, as you may be aware, the book was turned into a film starring Jennifer Lawrence from The Hunger Games and the Australian Joel Edgerton. Now, I've not watched the film, but I've watched trailers, and I can tell you that the film, while it follows the story, definitely deviates from the story. So, how do I describe Red Sparrow? If you've lived long enough, you're probably familiar with Mad Magazine's Spy vs. Spy, which first appeared way back in 1961, and it featured two secret agents engaged in stereotypical espionage activities. Well, this is how I feel about Red Sparrow. It's a 2014 version of Spy vs. Spy. It's actually a fast-paced espionage thriller that pits the brash, ambitious, and talented young CIA agent from America by the name of Nate Nash against the talented Russian ballerina turned sparrow, Dominika Egovorov, a beautiful woman who is recruited, you might say forced, by her uncle to become a sparrow. And a sparrow is a Soviet agent trained to manipulate and entrap enemies of the state through the use of sex and sexual advances. Now, the book is written by Jason Matthews, a 65-year-old first-time author when it came to the writing of Red Sparrow, about whom Charles McGrath of the New York Times said, "Jason Matthews is a retired spy but does not look like one. He more nearly resembles a high school principal, calm, patient, a little bland. The only clues to his former occupation, 33 years with the CIA, are his uncanny peripheral vision and his occasional use of terms like ops and intel." Well, Mr. Matthews' book has the feel of someone who's been in the business. His knowledge about the inner workings of Russia and Capitol Hill and about spy tradecraft makes this book very, very believable. And the more I reflect on the book, the more I appreciate not only his understanding of geopolitical relations and spycraft, but also his understanding of human nature. Now, as I said before, I love to read novels because the good ones, and this is a good one on many levels, reveal the human condition. And while I suspect that Jason Matthews did not intend to preach to me about the human condition in this spy thriller, he most certainly did just that in chapter 26. So let me give you the scene before I give you the clip. Dominika's uncle, Vanya Egovorov, the first deputy director of the Russian intelligence service, the SVR, gets called to the Kremlin for a meeting with Vladimir Putin. And Putin, intimidating, clearly in charge, wants an update from his intelligence director on Swan. And Swan is the code name for a mole in the U.S. government. Well, at the same time, Putin wants to know what action, and he wants to know that action is taken now, to uncover the mole inside their own camp. Putin knows that Egovorov has recruited his niece as a sparrow to seduce the American Nate Nash so he'll give up the name of the turncoat Russian agent. And in this clip, Putin is turning up the heat, and in the aftermath of the meeting, Egovorov utters a most insightful line.
"This was a show of omniscience, of strength, designed to shock, then awe subordinates, like Stalin used to do. She will follow my directions. Have her engage the American, but I do not condone active measures. It is out of the question." Putin obviously knew the option had been discussed. "As you wish, Mr. President," said Egorov. 9 minutes later, Egorov's footsteps were ringing down the grand staircase as he scurried to his waiting car. He collapsed in the back seat, contemplating the disasters that lurked in the career of ambition. As his Mercedes flashed under the bore of its Skaya archway, Vanya did not see another official car, less grand, heading toward the Senate building he had just left, carrying his Line KR counterintelligence chief, the diminutive Alexei Zhuganov.
Now here's my aha moment. It comes from this line. He collapsed in the back seat, contemplating the disasters that lurked in the career of ambition. You know, I titled this podcast, The Dangerous Double Edge of Ambition, because ambition is like a double-edged sword. In my own world, that of pastoring, the early Christian leader Paul writes Timothy, his colleague, in some respects his protege, about raising up young leaders to serve Christ in the church. And Paul writes this. He said, if anyone aspires to the office of an overseer, he desires a noble task. Now, the word for desires in the Greek language, the original language of Paul, is orego, which means to stretch forth. And here it's in the middle voice, which means hankering after, longing for, eager for, aspiring for myself, this role of being a leader in the church. And what is that? That's ambition. But he says, that's a good ambition if you're pursuing it as a way to love God and serve others in the church. But in another place in the scriptures, the prophet Jeremiah writes, and do you seek great things for yourself? Seek them not. In other words, Jeremiah gives me the other side of that double-edged sword. Ambition from good motives and a pure heart, man, that's great. But ambition from self-seeking motives, like that of Igorov, is not so great. In fact, as Igorov noted, there are disasters that lurk in the heart of ambition. And when I think about this book, that theme that disaster is lurking in the career of ambition runs all through the central characters in the pages of this book. And I think it does because ambition runs through all of us. And the question I'm asking is, will my ambition be a sharp sword of service in the hand of God, or will I cut myself and be the victim of my own disaster because I've succumbed to the dangerous side of ambition, the career of ambition, as Igorov notes? Hey, whether I'm serving as a pastor or a CIA agent, whether I'm the deputy director of some intelligence service, or wherever I find myself, periodically, I need to take out the sword of ambition and I need to assess and see if I'm playing too closely with its dangerous side. Is this about me? Or is this really about the people I'm serving? Is this about my name and my reputation? Or is this really about the greater good and that which God has called me to do? The dangerous double edge of ambition. That's my aha moment on my walk with Jason Matthews and his clever novel, Red Sparrow. Now, what you do with it? That's for you to work out on your walk through life.